You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on news that made headlines around our area this last week. And today, our panel includes Dawn Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, Mike Sharp, executive producer with Idaho News 6, and Margaret Carmel, reporter with Boise Dev. Happy Friday, everybody.
Hello.
So let's start with the pandemic. In particular, with the upcoming meeting with Central District Health, they are having a meeting this evening where they are looking at moving from a health advisory to a health order. And we should note that we air live at noon, but we also have a rebroadcast at 8 p.m. So if you're listening at 8 p.m. tonight, there already could have been a vote on this. So just FYI, if you are listening, but basically this is just putting stricter mandates in place, and they will be voting on that tonight. So Mike, that goes to the fact that Idaho is now sitting at close to 90,000 cases of COVID-19 since the pandemic started. We surpassed 1,000 deaths as of yesterday. And Mike, health officials are really concerned about basically what, like a surge upon a surge.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, even as we're watching the numbers go up, what we're hearing from experts and medical professionals is they're all kind of buckled up to try to see what a week from now is going to look like when we get 2 weeks away from Thanksgiving and the holidays when people traveled. You see the CDC openly expressing concern to people 40 and under, telling them that if you traveled and you were part of this holiday, we are begging you to isolate. There is significant concern, and we're in the weeds all day. I think the people that are on this panel, a lot of the people who are probably listening are doing a lot of research and following on Twitter or following the updates. Mm-hmm. There has been a significant change in tone from the medical experts that I've been talking to and that I'm hearing from about what the next few weeks could look like.
Right. And Margaret, the city of Boise has, you know, basically kind of been on the front end of putting health orders in place before some other municipalities throughout the state. Talk to us about what Boise Mayor McLean did in regards to a public health order just end of last week. I mean, it all rolls together nowadays.
So this took effect November 23rd, last Monday, or maybe it was this.
Yeah, I know. It happened.
It happened.
We don't need to talk, you know, figure out how long
it
ago.
It happened, right?
Know.
Yeah.
Time is a flat circle. Everything is a nightmare. So it goes. But so this new order, basically what it says is that there's going to be some enforcement. And what that doesn't mean is that if you are out on the street not wearing a mask, you will be arrested. That is not what this means. What it means is that if a business owner has some people in their establishment who are not distancing or not wearing masks and following, you know, what the store would like them to do, if they are following the law or the order, they can call the police and a non-emergency line and have a police response. And if the person refuses to leave or follow the orders, then they could possibly be issued a citation or potentially arrested. So far, I think there has not been, I haven't heard of any arrests that have happened. I haven't checked. The other thing that this allows is that if residents would like to report a business that is not following health guidelines, they can call the city's clerk's office and they will investigate and inspect the business. And if, you know, most of the time the city says they're just going to issue educational materials, and if there is a flagrant disregard for the order, and I think their words were an imminent threat to public safety, then they could, you know, might mm-hmm. suspend that business's license for 10 days. And then if it happens again, they could suspend it for a longer period of time, or on a third time, revoke the license. So far, there's been a handful of inspections, but no suspensions, last I heard.
But we should note that on Saturday, last Saturday, that there were a group of individuals in downtown Boise who went around to these to certain businesses unmasked, not following the rules. And I think it's fair to say that there was some backlash by business owners and by citizens asking Boise PD why they did not really enforce these not new mandates, but the fact that they should be enforcing these, correct?
Well, right. So there were some folks who were going into businesses, and the report is that there were harassing service workers who are often low wage hourly workers. A lot of them are, young people who are mm-hmm. in no way making these rules. There were some complaints to Boise Police Department. They put out a statement earlier this week and said that they're going to address the issue and ensure that there is a better response in the future. I haven't heard if that sort of, I'm going to use the word protest, but I don't necessarily, know if that's the right word, has happened again. I think that it will be interesting to see what happens later mm-hmm. with some of these people who do not support this enforcement, whether they will continue to test the limits or whether that will kind of fade away.
Well, and I think there's a couple. Yeah, I think there's a couple things at play here that are important. One, we don't know how large this group was. We've seen some video and it was a handful of folks, but they went in with cameras and streaming to Facebook Live and in other ways, and so in some ways it looked like it could have been a play to get broader attention. Margaret and I had a long dialogue this week to give you some backstage on kind of our editorial thinking. And we decided not to do a story on this. And the reason really is simple. It was a small number of businesses that were impacted, and it was a small number of people trying, it looked, to get some attention. And so we didn't go down that road. I think the other thing that's important here is I've been talking to some business owners all over about this, and some are really happy to have the ability to call the police and get some help. Some are frustrated because they think that this has actually increased some of the tension in their stores. I had a discussion with Albertsons, with their PR folks here, and you might have noticed that at most Albertsons stores in the city of Boise now, there are sort of almost Walmart-style greeters at the door.
Yeah.
And they're sitting at a table. In some cases, there appears to be security in place. And we get a lot of reader comments like, well, I go into Albertsons and they don't do anything. They don't help. And not to pick on this one particular retailer, but I think it's interesting because I talked to their CEO right before the Boise mandate came in, and he said, hey, look, our approach is, we do our best to ask people to wear masks. We offer them a mask, but if they refuse, we have to move on. And his I think point was to Margaret's point about these frontline workers can't be the cops all the time,
right?
And so now you have a situation where people were saying, well, and there was a really strong post on Reddit where somebody who purported to be an Albertsons manager was like, well, I've been told that I'm going to get fired if this happens. We've already had a citation at one of our stores. And, you dig into that. And first of all, there was no citation. This is about a week ago, right before Thanksgiving. And that's not how it works. But the communication, I think, from the city has been a little confusing in a couple places, in that if a business is doing its level best to enforce the mask mandate, even if they fail, police aren't going to take their business license. So if a business owner, like a shopkeeper, somebody comes in without a mask and the shopkeeper says, hey, you need to wear a mask, and the person refuses, at least from talking to the city spokesperson, that's enough. What the city's trying to target is some businesses, which I think people have noticed around town and have got a lot of attention on social media, that just aren't doing anything. And in fact, maybe not welcoming people to not wear masks, but certainly not actively discouraging it. So it's really kind of this complicated thing that has all these pieces, and mm-hmm. it's created a lot of confusion. And so trying to help explain to people what's going on has really been important through this.
And Mike, also, I think there's been a little bit, I don't want to use the word confusion, but some questions came up in regards to open ICU beds around the Treasure Valley earlier this week. I mean, we know that this is a huge concern. So talk a little bit about why this came up and kind of what we know when it comes to that.
Right. So I think most media outlets reported earlier this week the note that the St. Luke's Health System hospitals had 8 ICU beds available across Boise, Meridian, and Nampa. Some of those beds were already reserved for patients that were going to be coming out of their surgeries, the urgent surgeries that St. Luke's was still doing. But at the same time, so you hear that note, and I think too often we as journalists, you know, we'll tweet out that information or that'll be in the headline because that is very important information that the public needs to know. At the same time, they were also telling us that if you continue reading the story, that the ability to provide that critical care is not currently a concern. And I think that's really, really important. They are still able to take care of people. That's not to say that it's not concerning the fact that the ICUs are filling up, but there is, hospitals are figuring out other ways to treat these people. Individuals who are coming to the ER are still being cared for. And so we're not to a point yet where field hospitals are opening up. We're not to a point where hospitals are at full capacity. However, the doctors are once again saying, look, we don't know where we're going to be in 2 weeks. It's concerning we are where we are right now. But if you do have an injury or if you are sick, you still need to go to the hospital.
Right. And on when we had our medical experts on Wednesday, we were told with St. Luke's, at least on Monday, they had all of their ICU beds in use. However, come Tuesday, it had shifted and they had opened up another wing for COVID patients, but that's not always something that they need. It really is this kind of whole floating dynamic that they deal with, but it is still something of concern. We're going to take a quick break. Go ahead.
I was going to say some of it is staffing related too. And St. Luke's was very clear to say that even if all their beds are full, that they can accommodate people in the ER in a safe way.
And I think that's a really important point, Don. Mike, some news came out regarding PPP loans earlier this week. There were news organizations around the country that sued to find out the amount and what organizations receive these loans. And that was made public, I believe, Tuesday. And we found out some interesting things about the state of Idaho.
Right. I mean, I would encourage everybody to do some research into the different businesses in Idaho, the different organizations. I'm a nerd, so I saw the link and I jumped at it. I think a lot of news outlets have been waiting. I mean, obviously we sued for it, right? Or not we, but journalists sued for the opportunity to shed light on this. I mean, we're talking $2 trillion that was largely just kind of hidden. And we wanted to know who these organizations were. So I searched and found some interesting organizations that had received funding. There were a lot more that weren't reported that also received funding. I mean, I think some of us saw just before we started this that it was uncovered Tom Brady received $1 million in PPP. So there's a lot that's still going to be uncovered and a lot more information to come.
He's got to pay the guy to deflate the footballs. I mean,
somebody has to, right? And if you are curious, we do have a story up on Boise State Public Radio that James Dawson just did. So feel free to look at that, and you might be surprised by some of the organizations that receive these loans, especially organizations who have in the past been against advocating for quote government handouts. So I think it's worth people doing their own research on that and coming to their own conclusions, but we will direct you to where you can find that information. So with that being said, I remember back when Bodo was, parking lots basically, and then there was this huge revitalization and it really, had this vibrant energy, and now it's kind of back to how it felt like about 20 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I walked through it on Monday to look up one of the stores that I had heard was closed. And I was like, oh, that store's closed, and that store's closed, and that restaurant's closed, and that store's closed, and that store's closing, and what the heck? And it's as quiet as I've ever seen it. And that dates back to really that pre-remodel era. So there's a few things at play. One here, there are like five different owners of commercial property in that complex, in that kind of two-block area, or I guess four-block area. The major one is Hendricks Commercial Property of Beloit, Wisconsin. It's owned by billionaire Diane Hendricks. Her company bought up the two buildings that look like suburban shopping centers, the newer buildings. And they're really working to pivot the approach of the center. So they are working on a large food hall style concept that would have up to 22 different stalls for restaurants. They don't have most of these announced, except we know that the Still and Cafe D'Arte, which are currently in the center, will be there. So you think about the area that used to have Urban Outfitters, it used to have Loft, Joseph A. Bank, and Upcycle. All of those are going to be turned into this food hall. The Office Depot that's on the block there is going to be closing next month. Office Depot will not confirm that and, in fact, has pushed back on that, but the landlord tells me it's so I'm going to go with the person who owns the building. And so part of that will become the food hall and then for lease. And then on the other side of the street, Hey Penny Bridge Irish Pub closed earlier this fall. It's going to be replaced with a new concept called DeLuca's. It's going to be kind of a slightly upper-scale Italian restaurant. And then you saw Tasso, which is a sandwich joint that opened a couple years ago. They closed in there. They said on social media that they're going to move to a new location, but as of yet, we don't know where that's going to be. So a lot of change coming there, really quiet, but maybe here in the next 6 months to a year, you're going to see new vibrancy in Bodo.
Thanks, Don. Joey, I'm sorry. I have a kiddo in here at home, and it's live radio. No, Joey, go out of the office, get on your iPad. You gotta love 2020. Okay, let's get back to the roundtable as I try to parent and host at the same time. So, Don, also, can you talk a little bit about this whole idea of golfing in the Boise River? But I mean, kind of, but not really.
Yeah, this is some wild stuff. We've run a couple stories on things this week that have been kind of grinding their way through the government that didn't come into public light until we got tips from our readers. And this one is the golf course that has historically been known as the Plantation, but is now known as the River Club, has been engaging with the state of Idaho to lease some land on sort of an island in the river. It's attached to land most of the year, so it's not actually an island, but it looks like an island. And what they would like to do is build a bridge over this and build one hole and two tee boxes here to expand the golf course. They're losing some land on the northern end of their course as ACHD is going to come in and make changes to State Street. And so they've been looking for ways to kind of reconfigure that. This is, I think, caught some attention, but isn't fully unusual. The state of Idaho leases certain lands throughout the state that are in waterways and along shorelines for recreational uses. But people are certainly raising concerns. The Idaho Conservation League came out in opposition to this. They had seen an earlier version of the plan. Boise Dove obtained kind of the current version, and so I'm not sure how their stance has changed, if at all. But it is interesting. You think of the Boise River as kind of this open to all place, and to have a golf club in the middle of the river would be certainly a change. The owners of the River Club, formerly the Plantation, say that as part of the lease agreement, they would make a number of improvements for public access, including some additional wildlife trails and other amenities, including some fishing platforms and other types of infrastructure for fly fishers. So this has not gone forward into public view yet, other than our reporting on it. But it would have to get some permits, including at the federal level, as well as being approved by the Idaho Land Board.
It's an interesting idea, so we'll have to see how it plays out. And I do want to go back really quickly to something that we were talking when I was talking with Mike Sharp about these PPP loans, I know that I think I cut out there for a minute. And what I wanted to reiterate is that our James Dawson has put a story up at Boise State Public Radio. So if you do want to do your own research and you want to look into that, feel free to do that and go onto our website and look at that. Margaret, can you talk a little bit about this new look or concept for Expo Idaho? There's kind of been a lot going on kind of behind the scenes with that.
Right. So Expo Idaho is, you know, it's a 240-acre property over in Garden City. It's got the Boise Hawks Stadium, the now closed LeBois Horse Racing Park and the stables, a park, and the fairgrounds. And Ada County has been engaged in a process over a year now to get some input and figure out what's next for it. So now they've got some draft recommendations that are going to go before the Ada County commissioners and the public to see what they think. And they're kind of thinking they could go in three different directions or combine all three directions into one. And that's kind of this agriculture concept where they would really center the fair and make it a center with with equestrian riding facilities and 4-H projects and an extension of the University of Idaho Agriculture Center for Education. And the other concept is sports stadium and then enhance the fairgrounds area. And then this other concept is to kind of bring a town center feel like you would think of as the Village at Meridian to Garden City, where there would be a combination of retail, restaurants, maybe some government offices, housing, all kind of in this walkable development. And so there's these three concepts and they're going to go forward to the county commissioners after they have a meeting to discuss them next week. And then that's also going to go to the public. So we'll see what the public wants to do with that site. I know that there's a lot of, you know, different opinions. Some people really want a stadium there. Other people are hoping for more of an more of a commercialized revamp of the area. And other people are probably hoping that it could just be a big open space area. So we'll see what happens.
And it's also, I think, interesting, too, because this is being done under the current Ada County Commission, and the political makeup of that commission is going to change rather significantly here in just over a month.
And we're going to take go ahead, Don.
I was just going to say also these projects,
right.
These are ideas right now. There are no, we don't have a price tag on any of this, and that's kind of the next
step. So this
step.
Could really impact then what happens with that, Don, because...
Yeah, I don't know if we lost Gemma or if I cut out, but I think we'll take a break.
I'm back. More Reporter Roundtable. Don, thank you so much for taking us to break. We have had some technical difficulties, but
it's fine. It's fine,
if you guys could have only, you know, heard the last 2 minutes. So thank you for taking over. My apologies for my kid walking in as well. It's Friday. Okay, let's get back to the roundtable. So Margaret, the city of Boise, it's scaling back some plans for housing bonuses. Talk to us about this.
Yeah, so the city is looking at trying to address housing affordability. And one of the ways that they're doing this is Mayor McLean wants to institute a housing bonus where basically if a developer chooses to participate in this program, and they build near where there's already public transit, or they agree to include some affordable units in the building, they can get some perks from the city, like they're allowed to build a taller building than they otherwise would be able to. Or if it's less than 50 units, they don't have to go through a public hearing. Or if they're, or they might not be required to build as many parking spaces. The city had a lot of negative feedback on this from neighborhood associations and some other activists who were saying that basically they're going to be destroying neighborhoods and, you know, this is going to cause housing to get demolished in favor of large, expensive apartment buildings that neighbors don't get a say in. And in response to some of that, the city has scaled back and they've removed zones in residential areas from this, which means if something is zoned residential, it could only be housing. And so likely that's going to be in a neighborhood, a traditional neighborhood. And now the only zones that will be able to potentially participate in this program are places that would have a mixed use or a commercial use or a business use already. You know, think something on a major corner. Something else that the city is kind of looking at is this proposal would include a protection for neighbors where if a property is going to be next to a single family home or a duplex, it could only be 35 feet tall if it's in a if it's in this residential area. Now that could mean in certain cases a portion of the building would be 35 feet tall and then the rest of it could kind of step up and be taller. But so they're trying to include these things to placate some of these neighborhood associations. But I expect the planning and zoning hearing on this on Monday night is going to be pretty contentious, judging by what I've seen online.
And then, Mike, talk to us about the fact that a lot of folks seem to be hunting these days, more than usual, a lot of new hunters and things like that. But Fish and Game really want people to understand the rules before you go out, correct?
Right. So they're seeing record numbers of people trying to get tags and wanting to go hunting because obviously people feel trapped kind of indoors right now and taking any opportunity to get outdoors where you can spend time with people or spend time away from people and do something outdoors is something a lot of us are trying to do. So they're seeing these numbers, but along with more hunters come more problems. What they're seeing is people not necessarily taking care of the land all that well. They're seeing an increased amount of unlawful killings. But what they're saying is what they're currently seeing is largely, it's less about people trying to break the rules and more about people not knowing the rules. And right. So what they're trying to encourage people to go above and beyond, to do their research, to make sure that they understand the code, to make sure that they're doing things the proper way. Don't pull off the side of the road and stand on the road and shoot something that could be on private land, right? Like these things that Idaho hunters should already know, I imagine most already do know and are practicing that way. But the only way that we protect Idaho's resources in that way is to make sure that everybody's kind of playing by the same rules and trying to learn as much as possible to not step on each other's toes.
And Don, let's finish up with the fact that late night host Jimmy Kimmel is a property owner now in Idaho.
Yeah, as I've been saying in headlines this week, Jimmy Kimmel Live in Idaho. He has acquired, according to the Wall Street Journal, the a lodge, a fishing lodge in Swan Valley, which is not too far from the Wyoming border. And they're giving it some updates. They're going to put in some of his fishing memorabilia and reopen it this summer. It's interesting because it kind of hit the entertainment press this year that Kimmel would get summers off from his ABC late night show following Mike Sharp's wonderful newscasts at 10 o'clock. And we didn't really know why. Well, now it looks like he's going to spend a big chunk of his summer fishing here in Wyoming or near Wyoming in Idaho. Yeah.
And it's again, one more celebrity coming to Idaho, right? Like it's this gem that they all seem to find one day.
You know, somebody on Facebook was like, oh, why are celebrities coming here all of a sudden? I was like, Bruce Willis, Ernest Hemingway.
Right.
I mean, like celebrities coming to Idaho is Arnold Schwarzenegger is not new, but definitely an allure if you're a fly fisherman over in the Swan Valley.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys, thank you for bearing with me today. wow. Like I said, live radio report from my house, having to go back to our studio, kids walking in. You know, it's a snapshot of 2020. So I appreciate all three of you. And Don, just take us to break anytime, right? If I've talked too much, just take us to break. You know how to do it.
But I was just gonna say, do I get to take us out today?
Yeah, you want to? I really, but honestly, thank you. And thank you to all the listeners. We're getting this figured out. So honestly, much thanks to everyone. We've been talking with Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, as well as a fill-in host if I drop out. Mike Sharp, executive producer with Idaho News 6, and Mark Carmel, reporter with Boise Dev. Appreciate all of you guys and what you do.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
You too. More Idaho Matters next.